From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Cottet. This is Idaho Matters. In the news today, the city of Boise reports levels of the COVID-19 virus in Boise wastewater has risen steadily since early December. In fact, between December 1st and December 27th, the 14-day average of COVID levels rose about 65%. So what does this mean, in particular, for the rest of cold, flu, and COVID season? Well, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, is joining us today to talk more about this. And remember, if you have a public health question, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
Okay, so Dr. Pate, what's going on with these levels of COVID? Because I think we should also note that nationwide, CDC data is showing more than a quarter of wastewater testing locations experienced a tenfold increase in detectable levels of COVID between mid-December and Christmas.
Yes, it is clear that the United States is undergoing a new surge in COVID cases. We are following the same pattern that a number of other countries are going through that have already preceded us in this surge. And it appears that it's due to a new variant called JN1 that is acting peculiar in the sense that generally since about the last year when we've had so many different circulating variants, it's taken a while for any one variant to pick up enough speed to really predominate the infections. JN1 has been different. It has rapidly risen in a number of countries, and it is doing it here. In fact, when you look at the city of Boise wastewater, and you see the current report versus the week prior, there was no JN1, and then all of a sudden, it's like 77% JN1. That's unheard of. And so what it means is that this is a variant that is getting lots of rapid growth. It does not appear that it is any more serious in terms of being more causing more severe disease than the other variants, but it obviously has some kind of fitness advantage that's allowing it to really overtake all the other strains. And the problem is too that, of course, most people think COVID is over, or they just don't want to hear about it. So we're not taking many precautions. We've been gathering and traveling a lot recently, and so it is expected it's going to pick up. It already looks like from the wastewater data in the United States, this will be the second biggest wave we've had since the early time of the pandemic, and it's projected that perhaps in about a week, it's going to peak and it's going to be much higher. There is some modeling to suggest that 1 in 3 Americans will be infected at that time. Seems rather startling, but the models haven't always been perfect, but they've been pretty good. So we'll have to see. Obviously, I think the levels of COVID transmission here in Idaho are less than what we're seeing in some other parts of the country. But I think given what we're seeing, we should expect that over the next couple of weeks, we're going to see a lot more illness. And of course, we're already seeing a lot.
So Dr. Pate, with that said, I mean, what should people be doing to protect themselves either from getting COVID or at least getting, severe COVID?
Yeah, there's several things because the other problem is here in Idaho, as we've discussed many times, we're a little bit late, relatively speaking, compared to other states, but more typical for what happens in Idaho. We're a little bit late to the game with influenza, but influenza is now increasing very significantly. We have very high levels of influenza in the state. And so my concern is that we're going to see both this very steep increase in influenza here, as well as this very steep increase in COVID. And so fortunately, the protections against both are the same. One, you should really consider getting vaccinated if you haven't already. It is certainly not too late in general for people to get either the flu shot or the COVID booster. It may be too late if you get vaccinated now and then you get infected in the next day or two. But it, as a general rule, you should, if you haven't been vaccinated, I would sure strongly encourage you to get vaccinated right away and against both. And you can get both vaccines at the same time. The second thing is the kids are important in the transmission of both of these viruses. So if you have young grandchildren, if you have school-age kids, if you're around kids, you're a teacher, you work in a pediatrics practice, those kinds of things, you're gonna have exposures. So you may want to try to limit those exposures to the extent that you can. You may also want to avoid large gatherings, just because if you're with enough people, there's somebody out there that's infected and that's going to be a risk. And then, of course, this is a really good time if you want to reinstate masking, because wearing a high quality mask, especially an N95, but or even if you get a good KN95, if you'll wear a mask when you're out shopping or in places where you're going to come into contact with a lot of people, they work to prevent both. And so those are both diseases that we can prevent by doing some of the same things.
So Dr. Pate, with that said, just so I'm clear on this, the latest COVID booster, which I know that my family got earlier in the fall, can't remember exactly when, but is that a good match for this new strain of COVID that we're seeing?
It is. The problem is that there has been very low uptake of that booster. It's less than 20% of Americans have gotten the booster. And I think that's probably a number of reasons. One is, I think probably a lot of people are thinking, oh, well, you know, COVID's no big deal. It's like the flu now, we don't really, or like a cold now, we don't really need to get a booster. But that would be wrong thinking. It's clear from all the data that COVID remains more severe than common colds and more severe even than influenza. So I think a lot of people just didn't think they needed it. There might be some people that weren't aware there was this new booster. And then, of course, there's a lot of information out there being propagated by people who are part of disinformation campaigns trying to scare people. But we have given these vaccines to hundreds of millions of people. And relatively speaking, these are extremely safe vaccines. And the problem is that this, a recent study that I wrote about on my blog has shown that if you are just relying on your initial COVID shots, you know, or a year ago, 2 years ago, at this point, the virus has evolved so much that you're really not that much more protected than somebody who has never been vaccinated. And so the point is that the immunity from either vaccines or infections wanes. That is crystal clear. And so you're going to have to embrace one of two strategies. One, you're going to have to get regular boosters until we have better, durable, longer lasting vaccines, or you're going to just count on getting repeatedly infected. I strongly would urge you to get the booster. The reason is there is also talk out there that is not correct that repeated infections are not a problem and they will always be milder. That is not true. And a recent study showed that looking at people in Canada, that with their first infection, about just a little less than 15% of people reported long-term symptoms after that. Mm-hmm. When they got reinfected, their second infection, that number went up to 25%. When they got a second reinfection or their third infection in total, that number went up to just shy of 40%. And so it's clear that you're taking more risks with every infection you get. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have long-term problems, but the odds are not in your favor. So I would recommend that everybody get this latest booster. And yes, it is a good match for this latest variant.
So Dr. Pate, what if you are not testing regularly for COVID? Like, let's say you get a stuffy nose or something like that. Because I have to say, we don't sit around and regularly test if somebody isn't feeling great one day in my house. So how would you necessarily even know then, I guess, if you potentially are getting COVID over and over again? Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally does. And you're quite right. You certainly may not know if you're not testing. There certainly have been articles out on the internet saying, well, you know, these are the new symptoms with this variant, or these are symptoms how you can tell. You can't. You can't. They're not. That's not correct. And so the only way to tell is to test. And a lot of times people think maybe they have COVID, but they end up having influenza, or sometimes they think they have a cold and they have COVID, or, you know, they're too similar enough for you to be able to tell without a test. So we do urge testing, and we urge it for the following reasons. Number one, if it's COVID and you are of a person who is older or has mm-hmm. risk factors, you should really consider taking the antiviral medicine and starting that promptly. That's called Paxlovid. We have a few other options, but that's the main one. So that's number one. Number two is it may turn out that you have influenza, in which case we also have an antiviral for that. Number three is if you know that you have one of these two infections, influenza or COVID, for sure you should stay home and protect other people from getting this. This is no fun. And while you might have mild illness, another person can get a very serious illness. And right now, people are underestimating the impact of COVID on very young children. And we still need to protect them. So it's a good reason to test. I understand a lot of people aren't testing. And so the answer to your question is, Gemma, yes, if you're not testing, you're not going to know.
Okay. Dr. Pate, I want to talk about a recent blog post that you wrote saying that, frankly, we as a society are just being too complacent, not just about COVID, but how that could impact any future pandemics. Can you talk to us about this?
You know, as we obviously with the book I've written, I've spent a lot of time thinking about what did we get right? What did we get wrong? What regrets we might have, what things should we do differently? And I think that one issue is we're very bad at judging risk. You know, you can remember at the very beginning of the pandemic that people were downplaying the pandemic. We heard some of our legislators saying, well, you know, I don't see people dying in the street, so it can't mm-hmm. really be a pandemic. Well, that's because we have modern medicine. That's an example, thinking back to the days of the plague when people are dying in the streets. That's not likely to happen. The other thing is a lot of people just judged, well, you know, nobody that I know is sick. Nobody I know has died. Again, those are not really good ways to judge. And a big example is that there was and continues to be mantra that, well, COVID is nothing for kids. You know, they all do fine. Mm-hmm. It doesn't kill anybody. It doesn't hurt kids. And while certainly the deaths are lower in kids because kids do better with this virus in general, nevertheless, this ended up, depending on the age group, being the sixth, seventh, or eighth most common cause of death in that age group. And we have to think internally consistent. In other words, you wouldn't say, well, you know, not that many kids die getting run over by a truck. And so you wouldn't say, well, therefore, we ought to let our kids just go out and play on I-84. Because, you know, you have to put things in perspective. And if you take precautions like making sure that your kids have seatbelts on, making sure they are not around a loaded gun, making sure they're not running out into the street, those kind of things, this would be another thing that we ought to try to figure out some ways to protect our kids. And one of the things that continues to shock me is that legislatures and Congress and schools are not adopting clean air practices for their schools across the board. And there's so much we could do to decrease not only the risks of COVID, but influenza and many other viruses during the respiratory season in schools. So that's one aspect. Another is that when we do assess risk, we tend to focus on the immediate risks. So we think about when somebody gets first ill. Well, did they get very sick? Could they not work? Did they have to go to the doctor? Did they get hospitalized? Did people die? We focus on those things. And there's been very little attention, other than on your show, Gemma, about the long-term implications of these health effects and and what is possible from this virus. Because obviously all, you know, at this point, the most anybody's been followed is generally several years. And so I think that we just assume, well, if you didn't die, then you're going to be fine. We clearly know that's not true with adults. I think we're starting to get a little bit of concerning evidence in studies about kids, although certainly I don't think that we can conclude anything from it. It's just that it raises the question, are we sure that all of these infections that people think are so innocent are? And the frank truth of it is, if you asked a competent pediatrician, neurologist, cardiologist, they would have to tell you, we don't know for sure. And there are certainly plenty of other viruses that cause problems years later. And again, I'm not saying that this virus will, but we're already seeing so many things in adults that show us there are long-term problems. And now we're starting to identify things like viral persistence, where people, some people are not clearing this virus from their bodies, that I think we just need to have a little bit of caution. That doesn't mean that we need to go into lockdowns again. That doesn't mean that everybody has to shut down their life. It just means take an educated approach and make some risk assessments. I do plenty of things, but I also take precautions and I make some judgments about what things do I think are worth taking the risk, what are not.
I want to get to some questions, Dr. Pei, because we've got them coming in from listeners. So Mary in Boise wrote in and she says, my partner's mother has dementia and is in a private care home in the North End. They said that their pharmacy does not have COVID vaccines and residents must go to pharmacies to receive the vaccine. Well, most residents have mobility issues and the weather makes it difficult. The care home has their own nurses as well as contract medical staff. The problem seems to be getting the vaccines from the pharmacy. Once residents and possible care providers have tested positive recently, what is the best course of action from a family's perspective?
Wow. Well, the first thing is I talked to the management there. It ought to be in their best interest to get everybody vaccinated because, first of all, it's going to decrease the chances that their own staff are going to be sick. But also, you don't want to kill off your customers. And these nursing homes and care homes, they depend on people in this age group. And so it's in their best interest. However, there's an easy fix. If they will contact Central District Health, which is the local public health department, and request it, they will come out and bring the vaccine and they will vaccinate all of the residents there that want to get the booster. So just a call to Central District Health, and I've given Samantha some specific information for the questioner that will get to that person.
Okay, that's great information to know, Dr. Pate. Stephanie just wrote in. She said on December 27th, she got COVID. She was given the prescription for Paxlovid at St. Luke's Urgent Care. She's over 75 and with Medicare and AARP Medical Advantage Plan and Aetna drug plan, her cost to take the five-day regimen was $1,400. Stephanie goes on to say that the doctor in the urgent care had no idea of the cost. She has two neighbors who are pharmacists, and they had no idea how much this cost. So she said, please ask Dr. Pate to address this. Now, Dr. Pate, I don't know if you realized it would be this high for some folks.
Yes. In fact, there was one time when we talked about this long ago, Gemma, when we first got word that the government would no longer be funding that treatment and that it would go to the commercial market. And we certainly heard from the drug company that makes that they were, when they were considering pricing, it was going to be very, very expensive. And I didn't realize it was going to be this expensive, but I was expecting it to be north of $700. So this is even higher than what I thought. And, you know, this is the consequence when there's not many drug options and a pharmaceutical company can set the price. And and now that the government's not covering that anymore because the public health emergency has ended, unfortunately, insurance companies, employers, and individuals are having to bear the costs. And I'm, you know, I'm very sorry about that. I think that is a reflection on our greater healthcare problems. But yes, I was aware it was going to be very expensive. And unfortunately, that's going to be a deterrent to some people taking a drug that has been shown to improve their survival, especially patients at her age, and has also been shown to reduce the chance of long COVID.
So Dr. Pate, Tiffany writes in and she said her mother-in-law is sick with something respiratory. Yesterday, we called several urgent cares in town that take her insurance. None of them have PCR tests available. They only offer rapid antigen tests. So Tiffany writes, are PCR tests going to continue to be available to people? Neither St. Al's or St. Luke's Urgent Care are in network for her mother-in-law's insurance. So she wasn't sure if maybe they are offering the PCR tests.
Yes, to my knowledge, they are. I think St. Luke's, St. Alphonsus, Primary Health, I think all of those places are still offering the PCR. And that is generally the test we would do. The advantage of the rapid antigen tests are that you can do those at home. And so you don't need to do that. My guess is that for those particular clinics that she was talking about, they probably made a business decision to do the rapid antigen test rather than the PCR. But the PCR test remains the standard, if you will, for what we do at emergency rooms and urgent care.
So, Dr. Pate, this kind of goes hand in hand with Bill has a question. He said he tested at home and got a negative result. However, he said his symptoms are persisting. They're even intensifying. So he wants to be tested at a professional site. He lives in East Boise. And he said he searched online for testing locations, but no results. Bill says, I've had all six of my shots. My latest booster was in September. Is there current information as to testing locations?
So there, you can look at the CMS website for testing locations. There's also, I don't have it at my fingertips, but you could search online. There is a phone number you can actually text and it'll send you back. You just enter your zip code and then it'll send you places that are testing. A lot of pharmacies will test, not all of them, but some of them will. And then certainly there are some doctor's offices, particularly the bigger doctor's offices. And then, of course, as we discussed, urgent care. The thing to keep in mind is that with where we are now, if you test right when you get symptoms, there is a good chance that initial test will be negative. The peak average, the average number of days until you are at the peak likelihood of your test turning positive is actually 4 days after symptoms. So what I would tell him is, I don't know how long he's gone, but if he initially tested was negative, then test again, because it may turn positive even after your symptoms begin. But certainly, there's all the other possibilities we talked about too, including influenza, and that may be worth a visit to the doctor or an urgent care to get tested and perhaps tested for both.
So, Dr. Pate, can I ask a question then about this 4 day window you were talking about, and maybe to wait to test after 4 days of your having these symptoms? So a lot of times, like in my house, you know, my kids will complain of like a sore throat or, you know, stuffy nose, something like that. And you know, shockingly, the next day a lot of times they seem to be fine, because I think they don't want to go to school. But anyway, so with that said, but on a serious note, I think that's one of the reasons why I haven't been testing them or even myself. Is because maybe I'll wake up with like a stuffy nose, but by the end of the day or the next day, I'm totally fine.
Yeah. And so here's my advice is, if you've, you know, got something, you know, and every now and then, like me, you've got your allergies act up a little bit, and everything seems consistent, nothing seems out of the ordinary, then, and you don't have a lot of contacts that you know are sick, then yeah, you can wait and see. Even for people that now get sick and they know, wait, this is different. I'm sick, and I know my friend just told me that they are positive and I was with them. Even for those people, I don't necessarily recommend test the first day you get the symptoms. What I would do is, the most important thing, no matter what you got, stay home, except for your little truant children trying to get out of school. But
well, then I just sick. Then, yeah. I just tell my kids they can't have electronics if they're homesick, and it's miraculous how quickly they get
they
better.
They will recover very quickly, yeah.
It's a miracle. But, it's an absolute miracle.
But if you're sick and you've got symptoms, no matter what it is, stay home. Nobody wants that. Yeah. So just stay home. And then what I would do is test the next day. If you are positive, no need to test again. You've got it. If you're negative and you're still feeling ill or having fever or any of those other things, stay home. And then what I recommend is to test again either the next day or even better at 48 hours from then. Now, then if you're negative, now it's pretty good chances. No, you don't have COVID. It's probably something else. Mm.
So I have about a little bit under 2 minutes. And I want to get to this last question from Amy, because she has a 19-year-old daughter who had COVID in September. Her daughter lives in a college dorm. So Amy wants to know, how long should she wait to get the latest booster? And I have a feeling a lot of parents are wondering about this, about their college age kids.
Yeah, college age kids are at very high risk, because they tend to be little social creatures and always hanging out day and night together. So it is way past. So the first thing is, And, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, Gemma, that people don't understand that there are kids that are in that 5 to 19 age group that do get very sick from COVID and all. So if you have a kid at college, number one, make sure they do have the latest COVID booster. Get that. And if they haven't had it, get it today. Number two, make sure they had a flu shot. And again, get it today. And the reason is, even if we're not worried that your kid is likely to get seriously ill, first of all, it's a disruption to their school. It can spread mm-hmm. it to other people, and they're going to feel miserable. So go ahead and get those. And then the other thing is, check with your doctor to make sure that they did get the meningococcal vaccine within the past few years in the doctor's office. Chances they did, but check and make sure, because that's another illness we have to worry about in college dorms.
Well, as always, Dr. Pate, so appreciate your expertise in answering all of our listener questions. And of course, we will see you next week. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Bye.
We've been talking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. If you have a COVID-19 question or any public health question for Dr. Pate, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed, because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to LifeKit from NPR.